Sports, mankind's greatest endeavor. For centuries, it has separated the boys from the men, football players from their brainstems, and continues to this day to spark the fire of healthy competition in the hearts of its players.
Would you have drafted me in the first round?
I'd have taken me in the ninth round. No signing bonus.
Apocalypse Video and Aborton Hoof Auto present the third installment of Hot Dave's Summer Film Fest. Live from the Thunderdome in Citadel, it's the Summer Games.
With the Minnesota Twins exposed, the fact that the Oakland A's were fundamentally not a sound baseball team. I mean, they had a flawed concept that started with the general manager and the brain trust over there thinking they could reinvent baseball. Nobody reinvents this game.
Hello and welcome to the penultimate episode of Hot Dave Summer Film Fest, Part 3, The Summer Games. I'm Bobby Unitas. And I hope you saved your Outlook login info, because we're about to unleash some action-packed Excel formulas on your ass! As Academy Award winner Brad Pitt and Academy Award winner Jonah Hill and the undisputed international reigning king of the walking talk, Aaron Sorkin, revolutionize the game with Moneyball!
There are rich teams and there are poor teams. Then there's 50 feet of crap, and then there's us.
Welcome to Oakland.
My job is to take this team to a championship.
I need more money.
We're not New York. We're not going to compete with $120 million payroll.
We got to think differently.
Your goal shouldn't be to buy players. Your goal should be to buy wins.
Who are you?
Here is 25 players that have been overlooked by every other team for one reason or another, like an island of misfit toys. In here is a championship team, one that we can afford.
Who's the kid?
The kid is the new assistant GM. We're gonna shake things up. Tell him.
You want me to speak?
We're not pointing you yet. This is the new direction of the Oakland A's. We are card counters at the blackjack table. We're gonna turn the odds on the casino.
You don't put a team together with a computer, Billy.
Adapt to die.
Billy Bean has come in and tried to reinvent a system. Now it's just not working out. They call it Moneyball. I think that he bought a ticket on the Titanic.
Hey, Daddy, do you think you'll lose your job?
What?
Well, I go on the internet sometimes.
Well, don't go on the internet. Watch TV or talk to people. Do you believe in this thing or not?
100%.
Listen up. You may not look like a winning team, but you are one. So, play like one tonight.
We're doing something really unexpected and special, and the whole city is feeling it.
If we win with this team,
we change the game for good.
This better work.
I'm just kidding.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Hot Dave Summer Film Fest, Part 3, The Summer Games. And I have to start off with a little bit of sad news, just get it out of the way right up top. There's no real easy way to say this, but I had to cut Mike from the episode. There's six podcasters in the locker room, you know, you can't. There's already five podcasters in the locker room, can't have six.
Dave, you just say they're ball players, okay? They'll get it. You know, just tell them that you know, they're gone.
I had to, yeah. I mean, I had to trade Mike to another podcast in Sector 3.
Did you give it to him straight?
Had to give him to him straight. I told him, Mike, here are your papers. Go see Chad down at the end of the hall. He'll tell you what to do, where to go. That's all. Tough break, man. Anyway. Break.
And if you grab a Mountain Dew, that'll be a dollar.
Yeah, that was the last straw. Mike's like, fuck you. And then I said, okay, now you're fired. Anyway, you maybe ask yourself, why'd you cut Mike? Well, there's a reason for that. Like I said, we have five podcasters in the locker room right now. Six is one too many. And the reason being, first off, we're doing Moneyball. So we had to bring an economist on the line. Mm-hmm. Why don't you welcome Nick back to the show?
Oh, I do study economics, yes.
It's one of your favorite topics.
That's true. Yeah, I'm here to whip things into shape. Count the beans.
I'm also joined, of course, by veterans of the podcast, Ryan.
Yeah, this is how we do business in Cleveland.
Ryan, you break my balls, Ryan. I'm also joined by Cody.
I'm not going to fire anybody, and this is dumb.
It's part of the job, Cody. And finally, special guest returning to the show, former ball player. He was on the Airbud episode. We're hoping this is sort of a redemption for him. His legs are shot. He's not the podcaster he used to be.
But he can get on base.
Yeah, but he can get on base, man. Andrew, welcome back.
Okay, so Billy says he'll pay for Rincon himself, but when he sells him for more money next year, he's keeping the profit. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
That's a very visual one for a podcast.
Ryan, yeah, but you could take it easy. He's not a five-tool player, okay? He doesn't have it.
Well, just give him some time. We'll teach him how to.
You're going to teach him how?
Yes.
It's not hard.
Relief Podcaster is incredibly hard. Well, we're talking about Moneyball, guys, an Aaron Sorkin-written movie, and I don't remember the first time I saw this. It might have been on DVD. I can't remember. Like, was anyone excited for this movie when it came out?
I feel like did we go see it? I feel like we went and saw it.
Did we? I can't remember.
I saw this in theaters.
Didn't. Yeah, me too.
I was excited about it.
I don't know. Maybe.
Despite all his corniness or cringy lines, I'm a big Sorkin fan. So I was all about this movie.
How could you not be romantic about Sorkin lines?
Yeah. I love that stuff too. I'm all about it. It's very, you know, movie-ish, but in a good way. I don't know. Yeah.
This might be like kind of the least sportsy movie that we watch in this entire thing, right? I mean, as far as like actual sports on screen, like I mean, I guess we're seeing the behind the scenes.
It's about the industry baseball. Around sports.
Yeah.
That's kind of probably one of my big things is like it's kind of interesting because really for most of the movie you're seeing it on those shitty TVs and stuff like baseball
or the radio.
Yeah, and then when it does come out, it's like magic stuff and it's all like black box theater looking baseball. It's awesome. So.
And to skip ahead, like when the Oakland A's are in their winning streak, they finally adopt, you know, Billy Beane has finally pulled some strings. He's forced Philip Seymour Hoffman, the coach of the team, to play the players as he designed them, as he picked them. When we get to the game that could mean their 20th game streak, I forgot that they won. I was literally thinking, I don't remember if they win or not. Because the big thing in this movie is Billy Beane, you know, he has the superstitions like, no, I never go to the games. It'll jinx it. And he turns on the radio. He finds out that it's like, oh, God, it's like, what, the fourth or fifth inning, and it's 11-0. We're up. Surely I could go watch this game. And as soon as he goes there, I think it's like the Kansas City Royals start getting, like, you know,
they have
runs.
Yeah, they have a run. Yeah,
It's 11-0, and they start catching up.
And they blow the win streak, or they blow the lead they had, and Billy Beane's just like, why the hell did I come here? But they win, and like you said, Ryan, those movie moments, like when freaking Chris Pratt of all people, Chris Pratt, former catcher, now first baseman, hits that home run, you're like, and you just cut to Billy Beane in the locker room. He hears the whack of the ball, and he just looks up like, oh God. Like, that's movie magic. That's movie sports magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good stuff.
It's crazy. So
that's
the end.
That's almost the end of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
You jumped right to the climax of the movie. But
we had to. That's the whole cool movie is about the A's getting their sports magic back.
That's not what it's about.
What is it about, Nick? About numbers?
It's about
it's about whose players have the hottest girlfriends, who have the best job.
Moneyball
lines.
Is about how AI can do the job of baseball better than people can do it. That's what this movie's about.
I know.
And
it's very scary.
I'm a couple hours removed from watching it, and I'm not sure if I like it anymore. Because the message of it is a scary one.
Well, that's
adapt or die, Billy Bean says. You know, adapt or die.
It's funny that you say that, Cody, because actually, so we were watching it and Kara asked me, do you think that this approach, that Moneyball, changed the game for the better or the worse? And I said,
"Well,
I don't think it did either. I just think that it didn't solve the problem, that's for sure." Which we can get into later.
Well, they're kind of regarding 2023, they're trying to balance it back out again because of this type of thing. With new rules of baseball, they changed for the first time in a long time, you know?
Sure.
So the new rules are specifically... So, Ryan, because you know the new rules that they're implementing in baseball are specifically linked to this Moneyball theory?
Well, here's the thing. Like, so you see it in the movie a little bit where, like, Jonah Hill is, like, physically... like showing, like he's on the computer and he's like putting like little like dots on of like where the pitch is happening for certain players and when they hit well is when it's here and stuff like that. And what happened is now that stuff all got automated, and then basically like a batter's coming up to bat, and they would say, okay, he usually hits here, so the coach would tell the outfield to like move to this position, and so it's like less hits were happening because of this and things, and so now there's rules in guarding where like you can't I forget what the actual term is, where you can't move the outfield certain ways and stuff
you
like that.
You can't shift.
Like, that's one of the
yeah. Well, that shift. That so that's yeah, that makes sense, and that's obviously a response as technology evolves. Yeah. To how that affects strategy implementation. Yeah. But really what, for me personally, the Moneyball is the embodiment of market forces as they move forward. And it's, I think, because Dave already skipped to the end, I don't see any reason to skip a little bit further. But so here's the reason why I think this movie has one huge problem, but I love it so much that I forgive a lot of it. But basically, the big problem I identify in Moneyball is that the 20th win ultimately doesn't matter because the movie shifts its narrative to say, oh, that's not really what it's about. It's not about winning that game that they've been working so hard or the movie spent so much time with. So it kind of undercuts itself. But
I disagree.
Okay.
Let him finish his thought first, Dave.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Okay. So I think, yeah. So the ending, like after everything that happens after the season's over, when they lost the final game, it feels almost like it undercuts itself because like the force that Billy Bean pushed forward, this idea of stats and numbers to drive force the success of a team. If it's success, it's like they were working for a success that they seemed that they got, but then at the end of the day, if really it's just about that last game, then they should be doing the stats to win the last game. So it's almost like they're not like the movie seems to do a huge pivot that doesn't seem seamless to me. But at the same time, you move a little bit further, and here's the reason why to me it's all justified. Because Jonah Hill shows him the video that's like a metaphor for showing Billy Bean that he actually did make a difference, which is what Billy Bean wanted. And I really love his speech. He's like, I want to change the game, right? I love that stuff. And so Jonah Hill showed him, you know, you kind of did that, dude. And he has a big check in front of him that says that too. And Billy Bean, you know, stuck in his way. So what is Billy Bean doing? He's doing the same exact thing that the people he was lecturing in the beginning was doing. He fell into a different form of the trap of the old sentiment of the quote-unquote spirit of the game or the way the game is, et cetera, et cetera. He was still to a level trapped by the old spirit, basically. So even he couldn't move past.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought it was just he wanted to be close to his daughter. He didn't want to move across the country.
Well, no, because they even have the text at the end that says Billy Bean is still chasing that last game. Well, so he's his Moby Dick.
Yeah,
and I will say that. I mean, now we're jumping even beyond the movie. I mean,
it's a cool, it's a, yeah.
Let's start with the credits. How'd you guys feel about those ending credits?
It's a but, the music's really good in this movie, you know. I guess that's, yeah, good credit music.
Talk about the legacy of Billy Beane and where they're at now. Because, yes, he's still with the A's. He's not general manager anymore. But he is in a special advisory role. And actually, the A's are historically bad. Like, maybe the worst team of all time. And it was done on purpose. This is also a strategy of the franchise so that they could facilitate a move to Las Vegas. So it's kind of, honestly, I hate to be a downer here, but it's almost like, if you can't beat them, join them. Like, we're never going to win in small town Oakland. So we have to force our way out to move to Vegas. So now we get a bunch of money. And
that was a whole thing that, like, troubled me with the movie, because it seemed from a very early point that Billy Beane wanted to construct a playoff team. Like, he said that at least once. Like, he wants to build a playoff team. But then the movie seems to, like, stop caring about a playoff team. And so it just feels like at different points in the movie it stops caring about what it says it said it is caring about. But nonetheless, like, the force of Billy Beane's creation and the dedication to the cause, like, I think it's so admirable, and it's so interesting to me. I love it.
One last note
that last
on that, okay, Nick, is that, you know, you're saying that he kind of changes course there at the end, or he builds a playoff team, not necessarily building a team for the final game of the season, for, like, if you win the last game, that's what people remember. Well, I think they handle that well in the movie. They have one of the sound clips is saying that, the stats will get you so far. But when it comes down to one game, stats go out the window. It's just, you know, it's a roll of the dice, see who has a good night that night. And so it is, unfortunately, just never worked out.
Yeah, it's like the magic, romantic base.
And that's a cool, like, that's the paradigm that the movie actually just, I don't think necessarily the movie says it's like a normative stance, but we have one side, which is basically the stats, which says we don't care about any one particular game. We just care about the aggregate. But then you have the spirit of the baseball, which is actually the fans who are going to each individual game and care about what's happening in that game. And it's you know, to bring it out to economics, you know, one thing that infamous careless apathetic economists get bad rap is for, because we don't really care about the individual. We care about the macro and the big picture, right? So just another, like, another humorous analogy in this movie for me.
That's fun. Yeah, it's cool. I love those. I love these perspectives about this. It's cool. What about, I mean, Cody, you hadn't seen this before, right?
Yeah, I had never seen Moneyball before. I like Brad Pitt. I don't particularly care for baseball that much. Sorkin, I'm not a huge fan of, but I've, like, the movies I've seen of his, I liked. I'm just not, I don't go out for him. So it was very much like, it's a baseball movie. I'm not a huge baseball movie fan anyways. And I think had I known more about what Moneyball was, I would have been even less interested in it, which is like, it's not about baseball. It's about the business of baseball. But, like, fuck off. Like, I don't want to know. But having watched it, it is. Yeah, it's a very compelling movie. It's really well made. And real quick, you know, I would hate to be 20 minutes deep and not explain the movie. So let's just real quick for we're at minute 10, 15. Right. Billy Beane is the general manager of the Oakland Athletics. They just lost their playoff game in 2001 against the Yankees. He needs to rebuild the team after losing their three core players to the Yankees. How does he do that? He meets up with his good friend, Peter Brannon. By good friend, I mean he meets him in the office of another franchise's business. They get together and say, here's how we're going to change the game. They proceed to recruit a team based off not off. All these mystical, magical baseball heart stats, but instead based on cold, hard data that is irrefutable to anybody. That they get the runs, they get on the... They don't get the runs, they get on bat, or on base, whatever the fuck. And they build their team based around that. And it's all about how they have to fight against the establishment of baseball, which is not that. And the coach doesn't want to do that because the coach doesn't believe that that's how baseball is played. And so they have to fight against that. General manager pulls a bunch of strings. They go on to win 20 straight games. Wow, what an accomplishment.
Longest win streak in, like, history.
Longest win streak in baseball history. Then they lose, and it just kind of has that down, not down, but, like, that kind of quiet.
It's a very just
like what comes next.
But it's so, how it ends is just so, like, that's just how it just a fly, a pop fly gets caught. It's like not even dramatic, really. It's just like, it's just over. You know?
So yeah, that's the plot of Moneyball. I just want to be clear.
That's great.
Yeah, that was a good rundown.
That was really good. I had a little fun thing that was fun to realize is that, you know, the Yankees beat him in that beginning scene. But guess who beat the Yankees that year?
Who, Ryan? Who could have beat the Yankees in 2001?
The old Arizona Diamondbacks won that.
Ah, yeah.
That was the year they won the World Series.
You jock nerd.
I mean, it is something I'll always treasure, the Diamondbacks World Series. But at the same time, looking back on it, man, we kind of broke the hearts of the country.
I know, it did. It really was.
we really were the underdogs.
No, but we beat New York down even farther than it was already.
Yeah, but New York was in a bad place, David. I don't know if you knew about what happened.
Yeah, but they had a few moments. Did you see Game 5 and Game 6? Like, you know,
yeah.
Young Kim lost both games. Like, the Yankees had their moments, okay?
Yeah, but you only remember the last game of the season, David.
Whatever.
Didn't you learn anything from this movie?
I'm just saying that 2001 World Series was, you know, for anyone who doesn't like baseball, that's one to watch because that one was actually exciting. It was a movie. It was like movie quality. Like you literally had the biggest ups, the biggest downs for both teams.
Yeah. Because New York's coming in, it's 2 months after they were hit by the worst terrorist attack in the history of mankind.
Honestly, I'm surprised they haven't made a movie about it.
Spitting on the players every day.
I'm surprised they haven't made a movie about it because it is very movieable.
But it would be so fucking. It would be a bummer.
Well, that's why you tell it from the perspective of the Diamondbacks.
And you just never
mention
that the Yankees are coming in. They're like, they're doing it for their fucking country. At that time, real quick, not to get off Moneyball.
Propaganda movie.
It's weird. But it's just at that point in time, the New York Yankees were America's team. Like, that's what people were going for.
Who are you going to get to play like Rudy Giuliani now?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, how do you portray the Yankees? It's like they're trying to win it for the country. And yet Rudy Giuliani is like their mascot. So it's like,
he's like on the field.
Well, that's what's so funny. Like in this movie, so this the beginning of the movie opens with the Oakland A's against the Yankees for the game that'll determine which team goes to the World Series that year. And it's 2002. It's the year after the Yankees have lost to the Diamondbacks the previous year. But I love that this movie opens. This movie is brave enough to open with Billy Beane in his car listening to talk radio, sports talk radio, which is probably one of the most asinine things you can possibly listen to anytime. I remember being in the car with my dad. Every time sports talk radio was on, I wanted to just jump out of the moving car. But they also mentioned throughout this movie that basically the Yankees are just these rich people with big, big pockets, deep pockets. It's all about the pinstripes, and it's just like, we can't compete with these rich assholes over here in New York City. I'm just glad that the movie is brave enough to depict the Yankees in the crappy light that they are. I'm saying this as a guy who doesn't really care about baseball.
You know what's interesting, Dave, is I agree with that, but that is like, it happens in like every sport movie. It's like the rich team is the bad guy, right? Like, hey, we all remember the hockey classic Mystery Alaska when they play the New York Rangers in hockey in Alaska. That's a big deal. But like, if you look at this, it's not like the Oakland A's and Billy Beane's operation is like, as we said, it's not about like heart and compassion and spirit. It's about cold, hard, ruthless capitalist efficiency. That's what this is about. And so it's like,
Nick's nodding right now. Like,
it's just very weird for that to be like the protagonist side, because you just think about like Shaolin soccer, right? It was about tradition versus the push of progress via capitalism, and how there is a good thing at the core of like what you used to have. And this isn't about that. This is about Billy Beane pushing against that core, which is very interesting.
Well, I think that's because you're not used to seeing capitalism portrayed in a more just straightforward light. Because this is really, I think this is like this story is very interesting because the protagonist is like essentially a businessman, right?
Yes.
And he is in competing with other businesses. So it's just all this marketplace stuff. And even the player, like even the morality of the players the player's worth is defined by their wage in this movie. And it's like, the movie makes no qualms about that.
Yeah. There's a scene where Billy Beane goes with the Cleveland Indians, their great classic mascot on the wall. And he's talking about it's Cleveland Indians, that's yeah. what they mm-hmm. go to mm-hmm. and the way they're talking about shuffling players around is like they're talking about shuffling slaves. Like, these people aren't people, they're just commodities. It's so because Andrew, they're people, they're talking about people, and they're like, no, he'll go here, no, he's not going to do that, he's this, and you're just like, damn, they are talking about people as a commodity, and that just calls that to mind. That's all. I think
you're onto something with that. For sure.
And Nick, I agree with what you're saying. Like, you're not used to seeing something like this where it's like capitalism played kind of straight. It's he is a businessman, which also, again, this is why I'm like coming a little bit later from the movie. I'm like, dude, what is it? Like, while the movie's playing, I am sucked in. I'm fucking into it. I love it. And then I'm like, this movie's about a powerful, rich, white businessman, like, succeeding.
But that's the thing. He's the little guy in the movie.
Yes, 100%. He is. If you're going to make a movie about baseball general managers, he is the underdog of them. But that's what I'm saying. Is like, separate from it, you're still just like, damn, this guy is still like powerful enough to be trading people across the country, and mm-hmm. he has this kind of like this stuff. And it's the other thing that kind of just was like, wow, that's wild to me, is that this all happened in 2002, right? It's like, damn, look at what he did. And then this movie's made like 6 years later, like. It's just a weird, like, we're hyping up American business and the power to change something, which is interesting. Don't get me wrong. But it's also, you know, the whole Billy Bean, what's his name? Is it Billy James is the original baseball guy that they're taking all of this method
Bill,
from?
Bill James, I think.
Yeah. Sabermetrics, right? Sabermetrics is the whole thing that they're like, this is the backbone of what we're doing now. It's changing the way we're valuing players. And it's just wild. It's just a wild movie to look at. From that, like, well, when you're, so like I said, when you're in the story, it's great. It's just weird to look at.
Well, and that's why I was so surprised when I heard you and it react so positively initially, because I'm watching this movie and I'm expecting everyone I know to hate this, because it's kind of the implications of what it's doing is not usual. But what I would say about this movie is to defend. Go back to maybe your side, Cody, is that this movie is in some senses kind of idealistic of unfettered marketplace in a sense. So you don't really, then the movie doesn't really show, like, the guy they send home, you know, when he loses, when he gets cut because there's 25 players in the locker room or whatever, like, you know, the scene we don't see is him going to his wife and saying, I just lost my job, right? So that's something that we don't see. So the movie is designed in a more idealistic fashion to show how market forces can allow the little guy to succeed and win the big.
Well, that's
guy
why
is
I think I think the reason why it works when we feel better for Billy is because of the daughter and dynamic. That's kind of, and also that
it's
part
funny
of, like,
because I like I think that movie should probably cut that.
See, that's what makes it humanistic.
He should not have a soul. Yeah. He should not have emotions.
This is the change I would make. I would cut all the daughter scenes and have more scenes of Jonah Hill telling the players, like, okay, he hits like this, so you want to pitch here. And, like, doing these analytics, like, strategies stuff, like war room stuff. Like, because they have that in the montage, but I thought it would be so cool if they had it, like, you know, war room strategy stuff that, like that. That sounds cool to me.
Maybe I'm misremembering it, but for a large chunk of the movie, Billy Bean does not really socialize with the players. Yeah. It's a big point in the movie. Right. Like, no, there's a separation. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to cut these people, and you know, you're talking about people's lives and all that stuff. But I can't remember when. But do you guys? Is it after he talks to his daughter, or is it after he kind of talks with Jonah Hill, where he finally is just like, you know what, I should kind of begin to socialize a bit more, and it kind of turns the tide. Like, the team actually kind of gets behind him a little bit, and the philosophy of what he's doing.
After he trades Giambi, he trades Pena. He's basically seizing control at that point. He's saying, okay, Art, you're not going to coach the scene the way
Philip
I want.
Seymour Hoffman's not playing the players how they're supposed to be played, essentially.
Right.
Like,
he's not
playing
implementing
the
philosophy.
Like,
right.
He has
so
the
he
deck.
Jumps in and...
Like, he has the magic deck, and he's not playing it properly.
Yeah.
Which is a side note, it's shocking that it took 17 games before Billy Bean's like, God damn it. Like, all right, I got to get, you're not playing the guys that tell you, you keep saying you're going to do it.
Ryan, I'm so glad you referenced that, because that was my thought. I was like, Billy Bean is just net decking baseball. That's what this is. It's like, he found somebody else's, it's like the meta of baseball is like, everybody plays magic this way, right? We play the cards this way. And he found a deck that's like, no, you take these bad cards, but people don't know how the combo works. And then you put the combo together and you just play it like the deck tells you to play it and you'll win. And that's what happens. So that's also why I'm like,
Might not draw the right cards. There might be a time where you don't draw the cards.
And that's
properly.
Why you can't only trust the meta or the net deck.
Okay. All right.
Well, that's why you diversify your strategy.
Can we jock this up again a little bit? Okay, you guys got really nerdy up in here. Let's jock it up again, please.
I do think that. Well, I guess I'll jock it up in talking about the athletes a little bit. I do think that it is compelling. That I wasn't as sucked into the whole business aspect of it. I certainly didn't ever think of it as. I mean, yes, they speak very bluntly about. Okay, okay, you can have this guy. This guy will move this guy. But I never made the jump to like slaves. I get why.
I need to tell you, Andrew.
League minimum wage in baseball is $720,000. It's
really
what you're signing up for. Yeah. So I mean, yes, I don't know what it was.
Wow. Okay, slippery slope there, Andrew.
Okay.
They know what they signed up for.
I will say. I mean, so even if the Dodgers stuff doesn't compel you all that much, I do think there's other compelling aspects of it, especially the philosophy itself, because it's not just, I mean, let's create the best deck of players. It is we're actually bringing value, or we're seeing the value in players that the league does not. So this guy pitches funny, so all the other teams are disregarding him, but we see him as bringing value. He's actually an effective pitcher, even if it is non-traditional. And so I do think that aspect of it is interesting and did change baseball. Like Kevin Youkilis is an excellent example in the movie. Jonah Hill shows the video of him in the minors for Boston saying like, well, people say he waddles like a duck, but he is the king of getting on base. He won the World Series with him 2 years later. He was awesome. And so I do think that, at least, maybe it's different as a baseball fan, but I really did find it very interesting. I think some of the stuff about overlooking players because they don't look right or because they got an ugly girlfriend, I mean, it's funny. I do think it's overblown.
She's a six at best.
Yeah, it's kind of exactly. Writing kind of stuff, but it's, yeah.
Yeah.
They're simplifying what they were talking about.
Okay, let's move on. Artie, who do you like?
I like Perez. He's got a classic swing. It's a real clean stroke.
Too much. Yeah, I don't know. Can't hit the curveball.
Well, there's some work to be done. I'll admit that. Yeah, but there is. He's noticeable.
Got an ugly girlfriend.
What's that mean?
Ugly girlfriend means no confidence.
Okay.
Oh, no, you guys are full of it. Artie is right. This guy's got an attitude. An attitude is good. I mean, it's the kind of guy who walks into a room, his dick has already been there for 2 minutes.
Yeah, he passes the eye candy test. He's got the looks. He's ready to play the part. He just needs to get some playing time.
I'm just saying. His girlfriend is a six at best.
But still, I do think that there was a stigma, certainly, that, okay, if you don't look a certain way, well, maybe I'll go with the guy that does look like that just in case.
Because they also seem to account for ticket sales. They're like, it'll bring people to the park, and that's the business.
Or a baseball card. Looking good on a baseball card.
But
can I, real quick, I want to jump in to Nick's point about getting rid of the daughter. And I'm almost on that side because I feel like almost some of the, most of these characters, like, I feel like they either don't have arcs or relationships, really. Like, it's just like, they're going to do this, they do this. Like, the daughter, you would expect, and this is just like, hey, it's a movie, but this is real life, whatever. You know, you'd expect the daughter and him to have, like, a friction in their relationship that causes them not able to, like, really bond or something. But it's not like that at all. She exists, as Nick says, kind of just to soften him, just to kind of give him this, like, human personality. Because otherwise, what do we see? We see him caring about numbers and breaking shit and throwing shit. Yeah. And it's like, okay, we need to soften our hero. Let's have his daughter sing to him.
I think I'm sorry, Nick, but I do think that is maybe the purpose of that is to show that he has this silent rage and anxiety boiling under him that he has to keep below the surface to maintain a positive relationship with his daughter, with his ex-wife, things like that. And I think it speaks to the quality of Brad Pitt's performance. I thought he was awesome in this. It's incredibly it's understated at times, but yeah, he can really turn on the charm or blow things up when he needs to.
Twinkies.
He's the best eater in cinema.
What was he doing with that cup? Was he eating sunflower seeds and spitting them into a cup? So, was that what
I assumed it was chewing tobacco.
Yeah, chewing tobacco a lot of the time, I believe. Yeah.
Oh, was it?
I thought
wow.
it was seeds, but maybe you're right, yeah.
If it's 2002 or 2001, The league like separated Hard from Chu, right? Like there was a thing that happened. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's them doing chewing
or maybe he used instead. Maybe it's like he used exactly, to maybe exactly you know?
That's people true do, yeah him.
Yeah. He looks like Redford a lot too in this movie.
Yeah, he does.
Can you imagine looking like that guy? What the hell
must
is going
nice,
on,
dude?
Must be nice. Jesus Christ!
Must be nice not to look like a fucking swamp.
Well, that's why. Yeah. It was kind of startling when it shows him in like 1986 or whatever when he was like in minor leagues or when he's first coming up, and I'm just like, wait a minute, he looks like Brad Pitt like now, like 25 years later, like Jesus.
So there's something that we didn't really talk about, and that's Billy Bean's backstory. That the movie kind of fleshes out throughout the runtime. And basically, Billy Bean was a very promising, I guess, season high school when they spotted him. And
he's got all five check marks, yeah, power, hits, you know.
He's all maxed out. He's max stats, right? And
great jawline.
Yeah. 10 out of 10 wife and all that stuff.
He's got a really hot wife.
But one of my favorite things ever is Spike Jones popping up uncredited.
Oh my god.
You good, Billy?
Yeah, good. How are you, Alan?
Good. Really good. Things are peaceful around here. It's good to see you.
Thanks, Alan.
You know, I haven't got to see you since the playoffs, and I really wanted to say that New York was heartbreaking. I'm sure for you, too. And not many teams make it that far, and to watch you guys go that far and play that well was really an accomplishment.
Well, that's nice.
What's his deal? He does this all the time. Like, he's in Babylon as, like, an uncredited role, too. He just pops up with Brad Pitt. They must be buds. Spike Jones. Pitt. Anyway.
But this was one interesting thing that you bring up that they kind of run throughout the movie. Like, in fact, like the guy that he ends up firing, one of the scouts, says like, oh, is that what this is all about? You're just pissed because we picked you. We thought you were good. And then you ended up not panning out.
Yeah.
So you're blaming the scouts.
Okay. I don't give a shit about friendship, this situation, or the past. Major League Baseball thinks the way I think. You're not going to win. And I'll give you a nickel's worth of free advice. You're never going to get another job when Schott fires you after this catastrophic season you're about to set us all up for. And you're going to have to explain to your kid why you're working at Dick's Sporting Goods.
I'm not going to fire you, Grady.
Fuck you, Billy.
Now I will.
Yeah. I think that it serves to show that, I mean, because they mention it at least once or twice, that he's a different kind of GM. The GMs are not typically players, and he was. He's been through all the ups and downs of what being a player is. I mean, you can see he gets traded like 3 or 4 years in a row because he's just a disappointment. Yeah. And so I think that it goes to show or support that a little bit. But, I don't know. It's – I don't know. It doesn't do a lot.
I could have gone to Stanford.
So one thing I think, as I'm talking about it, one thing I think it does, it is it actually lends humanity to Brad Pitt, Billy Bean's apparent apathy to like cutting players and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So instead of coming across as like the cold hard businessman who's like, you know, trading slaves and all that stuff, as Cody likes to say.
Jesus.
I wouldn't say I like to say it. It kind of evoked that moment. That's all, guys.
Let's just pull back a tiny bit.
So as these after all these slave traders meet, I think Billy Bean knows what it's like to be in that situation. So I think this is just my guess, but I think the movie, by doing that, creates a human link between the boss and the worker, basically, kind of thing. And so it's supposed to create a link there that makes Billy Bean look better.
I think you're kind of right, because in a way, he's like, I've been schmoozed before, and I know what it's like to be talked up, but then they don't actually care. So it's easier. Yeah. It's better for them to just be like, nope, it's transactional. They get it. It's a job. Like,
and you know what? It does work with the first guy that Jonah Hill has to tell. I like that they actually made that scene. And I, because it's been, I hadn't seen this since, 2011. So real time plus the apocalypse time. It's a long time. So yeah. I didn't know how that was going to go. I thought he was going to maybe like hit the window or break the wall or something like that. But no. So that was like a tense moment that was played out.
Excuse me, Carlos.
Yeah.
Can I speak with you for a minute?
Yeah.
Carlos, you've been traded to the Tigers. This is Jay Palmer's number. He's the traveling secretary for the team. He's expecting your call. He'll take care of everything.
Is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
I liked that, and I think seeing his history does absolutely support what you're saying, Nick, and makes this moment better. Is, you know, it is very cold, calculated. You just got to cut a player. You know, these are guys are professionals, except for when he has to send Mike Magnanti down after they trade for Rincon, who's like, "Hey, man, I know Billy. I've been having a rough start to the season," and then he assumes, "Oh, actually, I got traded. No, you're going down. You're not even in the show anymore." And I mean, so he understands this is crushing, and he feels bad about it because he got sent down after he got brought up initially, and never really was the same. And so,
and you know,
it was I like that moment.
And there is this weird like more econ speak equilibrium in the sense of okay, so there are players that are getting cut from his team, like the guy I forget who his name was, but the guy who got cut, and then you have these other players who are, like Andrew said earlier, you know, basically like on the surface, maybe not desirable players or all-stars or whatever, but they have the value that this, you know, organization was able to identify. And so it's this equilibrium going where, yeah, there are some people, this guy's going to go home and say, you know, I'm out of my team or whatever. But then the other guy, he got a job. So it's just kind of this interesting market landscape that I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do get the little home scene with Pratt and his family a little.
So, yeah.
He's a little taste, the home life. And he's not working. You know, he's not.
I love that scene too, because it's like, I don't know, it feels that context of Billy's background adds, I think, humanity to that scene, because even though we don't know it at the time, when you look back, Billy knows what that means to him. I think, and I think you can juxtapose that with the scouts that they see in the flashbacks, where it's just like they were telling the lie or selling the product
blown,
to their team.
They're blown.
Yeah, exactly. And so you have Billy, who also, you know, does approach the contract thing pretty directly too. So that's just like his way of connecting easily to the players.
I couldn't. Another thing I noticed, like to kind of speak to sometimes like what could be perceived as like the cutthroat world of baseball or just pro sports in general, like the scene in the beginning, like I think it's after their first loss or right before their first game, like the reporters are all asking all the players how they feel and all this stuff, and they're talking to David Justice, the old veteran, the 37-year-old, and he keeps saying like yeah, they keep saying I'm out, I'm gonna prove them wrong, blah blah blah, and then the reporter kind of coldly asks him like, okay, yeah, that's not what I asked if you were at
100%. It's actually a little
it's just like, geez,
well, it's even gnarly because it happens right before the game. It's not after the game.
Is it before the game?
Before the game interviews. So you're just like, what's wrong with you people?
Yeah. Way to put that in his head.
Yeah, dude.
I know. God. I just thought, like, sports is a cutthroat place, man. It's pro sports.
Well, let's face it. I mean, they're getting a deal with you. The Yankees are paying Jason a whole lot of money, and you are coming here on a dime. How does that make you feel?
I got to start with the age. 36 years old. How do you think your body's going to hold up this season? You spend a lot of time at strip clubs. You spend a lot of time partying. Do you resent all of the attention that you get off the field?
I feel great. Like I said, I did a lot of work to get ready
for this.
Excuse
me. Can you please get out of my shot? Sorry. Go ahead.
I know there have been some questions about my age and my declining skills, some say, but I'm here to prove that wrong.
I asked you if you were 100%.
Well, it's like there's that other scene with Chris Pratt and the older player, and he's like, so what's your biggest fear? And then he's like, oh, you know, when the ball comes my way.
Yeah. Nah, for real, laugh. What is it?
Yeah, he's like, oh, that's really it.
Oh, good luck.
I just want to bring up one point since we were talking about David Justice, because that's who Chris Pratt is talking to in that moment. There is a arc that does not get completed in this movie, and it is to its detriment. Maybe take off 2 stars for this, honestly. And that is, David Justice can't believe that he has to pay $1 for soda. And then Billy Bean gets him a stock soda, and they never show us that scene.
You don't see the scene of him being like, give him the thumbs up. Like, yeah, Billy.
You never see the scene of him being like, you're fucking right, dude.
Well, they should have drank it at the 20th win. They should
the team's
have, like,
happier, though. You know?
Yeah, but they don't show us. They set up the problem. We see him fix it. We don't see the team recognize that he did that for them. Like, it just feels like, and truly it is
no,
just
Cody's
like,
right.
Thank you.
No, I think
yeah, it's kind of all
better.
Summarized. Like, we don't get the scene of Justice being like, hell yeah, free Pepsi. But you do, I guess it's kind of encapsulated in the moment when he's like, oh, and by the way, when he's like negotiating on the phone, I want soda for my players for like a year. What we get is summed up in Jonah Hill being like, yeah, man, you're finally getting it.
What? That's not comparable at all.
No, the team getting 20 wins in a row is the end of that.
But
part.
I think to Cody's point, like after they won the 20th game, we should have saw that player go in the locker room and get a free soda.
That's how movies work. I don't know what the fuck was
oh
in here.
Oh my gosh.
Like, that was in the end credits.
Is this our first podcast?
Yeah.
Is
this the first time we've seen a movie? This is what you do. If it
makes me wonder if this was in like a deleted scene or something. Probably. Now I want to watch that.
Well,
I want to set that up.
Well, Cody's right. I mean, because this scene is missing, this movie is definitely a lot more experimental, I think.
This movie's all about slaves, and they didn't show the free Pepsi.
I didn't say that it's all about
2 stars, right,
but,
off.
I mean, listen, if we're going to talk about it, let's talk about it.
God.
Real quick, I do want to talk about 2 other things, and then I swear to God, Andrew, I'll let you go to your point. I know you were going to make one. We talked about how it was weird that there was Spike Jonze shows up uncredited. Is it not Billy Kotick at the beginning of this movie playing the owner of the Oakland A's? Who is that?
The guy that they're sitting at, that's behind the...
That's the CEO of Activision, I'm pretty sure. That is just
straight up
a total scumbag businessman. And it's so weird that they cast him. I'm almost certain of it. Double check. I could be wrong. Andrew's looking confused, but I'm...
Andrew's like, is this like another nerdy thing?
It is. It's Billy Kotick, yeah.
So they just brought in some supreme, like, dude who's hated in the industry that he runs because he's, you know, a cutthroat businessman. So that's interesting. Maybe he's an actor at one point in time. I don't
know. Well, it's funny you bring up casting news. I would argue that is balanced out by who they picked to play John Henry, the owner of the Boston Red Sox. He's actually someone we've seen on the podcast or in the summer games.
Hmm.
He plays the older version of... Smalls in the Sandlot.
Wow!
Oh yes, he does.
Wow. Holy shit!
Smalls is running the Boston Red Sox.
Back to baseball being about slavery. I do want to draw attention to when Billy Bean is dealing with his crew, and they're like, "This is what he's got. The girlfriend, he's got this. He's good for." And it's like, damn, baseball is so old and so white. That was the thought I had in that scene. Was just like, this is insane. Like,
It's interesting that actually all but 4 of the scouts in the movie are real scouts.
Really?
4 of them are actors. So yeah, they got real scouts to be in there. So I wonder if in reading their lines, they were like, yeah, this seems real. Or if they were like, this is ridiculous. I don't know. But it is absolutely.
He's got a baseball body and a lot of pop coming off the bat.
I would bet they don't have lines. If they're old ass men, I doubt they're, you know what I mean? They're like, hey, just talk about this act. Talk about this player like you would. And then that's what they, and you know what I mean? Like, because that was my question is like, why would you have all these people who are actual this and give them lines? Like, Bobby Kotick's not a fucking actor. Why do you have him? And it's like, just treat this like you're dealing with a, you know what I mean? Like, they put them in roles of what they actually do. So they got a guy like Bobby Kotick to be the CEO of the owner
That's
of the
so
Oakland
weird.
A's. It's the weirdest thing. It's so strange that they do that throughout this movie, which also is kind of lends into the whole thing where I'm like, this movie is just lionizing the idea of a strong corporate businessman succeeding in getting an initiative that's not even his own. It's not like he created this system. They've been doing it since the 80s. And apparently in real life, the Oakland A's, the GM before Billy Bean is the one who brought sabermetrics to the Oakland A's, like, in earnest, and then Billy Bean just continued it. But anyways, whatever.
Yeah, but what you don't appreciate, Cody, is that Bill James, the pioneer of the theory, didn't have the foundation or capital to take the risk that Billy Bean is doing with his resources to pursue this avenue, this business strategy.
So he's a hero because he has the wealth already, is what you're saying?
I didn't say he's a hero. I'm saying that that's what he's doing.
Yeah, for sure.
The movie says he's the hero. I mean.
Are you saying that a good economist can come from anywhere?
That's right.
No matter your background, no matter your status.
Yeah, we can clean toilets. We can crunch numbers.
Hell yeah.
We can do it all.
I believe
you know,
it.
It's about those connections, about family and your daughter singing your songs and telling you you suck. You know, or
you're a loser.
I do think I did like that. I loser. Think I was like when that last shot of him in this truck listening to his daughter's song. I did like say to myself like, "Oh, it's all worth it." Because I did like that, like,
yeah.
That song.
I know, it's a good, interesting shot, too. It's looking out, it's like, it's just different. The movie's really directed really well, I think. And it's like, very interesting shots. And, really close, a lot of close-ups. For baseball, it's a lot of small spaces in close-up, which is cool. It's different than any other sports movie, no way.
Yeah, it was directed by Bennett Miller, who really has not done much. He did Capote. Well,
he had a good run. He had a good run for a minute.
Oh, so those were your,
he packed
your
it into
Seymour
a few
Hoffman
movies.
Connection. He did Foxcatcher, and that's like it.
Yeah, I wonder what happened.
Which is interesting because I remember when Foxcatcher came out, I was so stoked because I love the trailer. But I didn't love it when it came out. But now that I'm kind of seeing Moneyball now, I'm interested in checking out
Foxcatcher. Yeah, maybe Foxcatcher would be a good one to add to the minor leagues of Hot Day of Summer
Ooh,
Film Fest that aren't televised.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I wonder what his deal is. I wonder why he didn't really make anything after Fox.
Yeah.
I thought that movie did okay, I thought.
Well,
like
he
said, he had a good run.
A lot of people were mad that he made Moneyball because it made businessmen look so good. So he got...
Well, that's why he made Foxcatcher, is because Foxcatcher was like, look at what happens when a businessman who ultimately has wealth but no experience takes over an organization and drives it in the ground and kills one
exactly,
of the
businessmen. Exactly.
He's bouncing it out. He's all about the intersection of sport and business and how that can be both good and bad. And I respect that. I respect it.
Yeah, maybe he's trying to like complete the trilogy.
Yin and yang.
Oh, what's... Okay, the trilogy.
Maybe he's trying to like find the right thing and not do something.
He's waiting for his own Master Gardener.
Yeah.
It'll be the Dollar Trilogy. Or this, what's the Ball Trilogy?
He appears to be, as of 2018, working on a documentary on the topic of future technologies. So I'm sure it's evolved into AI. He's talking about AI now and how it's going to take over for businesses and stuff.
And the robots playing baseball and stuff.
It's going to be Roboball, baby.
Robots with hot wives. Hot robot wives.
One thing I forgot about too is just like Philip Seymour Hoffman popping up, and it's just such a kind of like a, it's really good role.
It's a small
role, but it's
a good one.
Yeah, it's cool to have him in there doing that. He's good.
He's basically just a stick in the mud. It's like no, like you pay me to be a coach. I'll coach the way I want to coach with the team you give me.
I almost felt like with Philip Seymour Hoffman, it was kind of weird seeing him pop up because he pops up for the first time after we've met all of the other managers or assistants or whatever, the scouts. It was the scouts. That's who Billy Bean talks to all the time. Because you know that those are the real guys. And then you have Philip Seymour Hoffman, and it's like, yeah, they're kind of like jocking him up a little bit. But he has a soft face. He has a face of a person who doesn't stand out in the field 19 hours a day watching the sun go down. So it's just kind of like, it's weird. I'm just like, oh, it's Philip Seymour Hoffman. He doesn't look like a guy who's coached baseball for a million years. He looks like an actor who's trying to be a coach. It's just a weird thing, and I think it's because you see how haggard all the other guys look who are those people.
It might have been interesting because, you know, I would assume the coach is kind of the one, like the big cheerleader for the team, like hyping everyone up, you know, like in my mind, that's what a coach does. But it's interesting that the movie, you don't really see anything. The only thing we see of Hoffman is like him getting into it with Billy Bean. Like you don't see any like scenes of him like trying to get his team revved up or anything like that. But I guess the whole idea is like that can maybe fall into the idea of like, well, no, that's is that the old way of playing? But that, I don't know. It seemed like an interesting thing to omit, to not have like the coach of the team, because it's such a big part of other sports movies. Like the coach, you know, he's like, he gets us all revved up, but they didn't show him do any of that.
Or managers are sort of more like the subdued chess players kind of thing.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I would say it varies pretty dramatically by sport. Managers are very reserved in the most part, except for then they blow up at umpires, but with their players,
okay,
it's basically like, oh, we're all professionals here, handle your business kind of
is,
thing.
They do their thing, you know.
Is the manager the same thing as the coach? Is that what we're talking about?
Oh,
in baseball, they're called the manager. Yes.
Interesting. In baseball, they take a business term rather than a sports term. That's just interesting.
I guess I'm just thinking, like, the coaches we've seen so far in the Summer Film Fest, you know, are like people on the sidelines yelling like, go, 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 ja, Fumble risky, ah, ja. You know?
Well, we're talking about the coaches, but now I know they're called the managers. I just want to draw attention to, I think it was during spring training when we see all the managers talking to Billy Bean about why he's like, they're not playing the it's his first day. He's, you know, oh, we're not playing him at first base. He's terrible. And it's like, it's day one of this first week.
Yeah, they're ready to cut
him. All of them are dressed up in their own baseball uniforms like they're about to fucking get on the field. Is that typical? Because if so, they're a bunch of dweebs.
Yeah, that's the way. That's the uniform code.
It did kind of honestly. I agree. When Philip Seymour Hoffman is in like this in the outfit, the uniform, it looked like a kid cosplaying or something.
It just makes me laugh. About?
That's the jersey.
I know, they but him wearing it just seemed weird.
They're not pretending. That's their team.
They're like. I got told I couldn't play the game anymore at 18. But now I'm playing it for real, baby. I'm wearing the uniform.
This makes no sense to me.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. What? They should wear suits again. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, if they're going to call themselves managers, what are we doing?
Yeah, with fedora hats. Bring that look back.
Oh, God. Makes me laugh.
With a clipboard.
That's funny. Yeah, I like him in the movie, even though it's small. It seems like a surprise that he would take that.
Yeah.
How long ago did he?
I think it was like 3 years later, I want to say. He died when that second or first Hunger Games Part 1 or 2 came out, like Mockingjay or whatever.
Andrew, so you're a big fan of Sorkin. You're a big fan of your sports. I know you're a sport guy. Is this your favorite baseball movie? Like, or is there something that you'd put on?
Oh. That's a good question. There's so many baseball movies.
The reason I'm asking, I guess, is because I'd be very curious, since we talked about this one seems to be much more the business of baseball movie.
Yeah.
Even though they have a great line, right? It's hard not to be romantic about baseball. And that kind of is like the tag that goes against everything the movie's about. But it's like, it's nice. So I'm kind of curious, like, you know, how it stacks up to others.
Yeah, no, it's hard to compare it to, like, The Sandlot, right? That's another movie where it's about baseball, but it's more so about, like, kids growing up, right? Starting in a new town, that kind of thing. It's tough.
They all kind of have, like, a little separate thing. Like, it's almost like baseball. They're all kind of about something.
Field of Dreams is...
Are there any sports movies that are, like, truly about sports?
No, I'm trying to
think. About just
yeah, it's like Field of Dreams.
Just watch a game, right?
I mean, to stack them up, Field of Dreams is about talking to your dead dad. Moneyball is about slavery.
Having a catch.
Sandlot's about growing up. Having a catch.
Miracle's about Cold War tensions.
Space Jam is about bullies.
I suppose it's my favorite baseball movie, just because in the genre of baseball movies, but. They are hard to compare to one another because, Sandlot's for kids. This one is, as you're pointing out, much more about business. I think there are a lot of pretty good baseball. There's a lot of bad ones, but it's kind of
what's the worst baseball
crazy
movie
thing
you've
about
ever seen.
Oh man! All right, now I gotta look it up. Baseball movies. All right,
all right we'll come back.
So...
to it. Ryan, you're a jock. You love baseball. You're always talking about the game.
You know, one I haven't seen that everyone raves about is Bull Durham. I never
That's
seen
on Criterion.
Yeah,
Bull Durham is I like Bull Durham. A League of Their Own is also fantastic. I think that's great. In terms of bad baseball movies, keep going. I will think.
So what
about
you're saying
this.
Is there are no bad baseball movies.
I would argue
Rookie
best,
of the Year is good.
The best baseball movie isn't about baseball. It's called Basketball. And it's a combination of sports, really. Why the fuck aren't we doing that on this series?
Oh,
well, there's always next season, Cody.
All right. Well, I mean, this is almost too easy, but probably The Benchwarmers with Rob Schneider is probably the worst baseball movie.
You know what? I never watched it, but apparently it's not really great. It's For the Love of the Game, the Costner movie that Sam Raimi
It's okay.
Made.
It's okay.
It's all right.
It's yeah. okay.
Oh no, I'm trying to think of one too.
Costner himself, man, he's got what he three. Then he's got For Love of the Game, Bull Durham, and Field of Dreams. He
could have gone pro.
Who's in
I
the
heard,
rookie?
So.
Isn't that
the Dennis Quaid?
Oh.
Oh, you know what? I do have one a bad baseball movie. What's it called? It's someone with Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis in a baseball movie?
And he has... Oh, no, there's no... Maybe I'm thinking of The Rookie. I don't know. There's a movie where, like, Bruce Willis beats, like, the younger version of himself. Am I going crazy?
Oh, that was the
kid? Disney's kid?
Yeah. The kid, yes. Yeah, wasn't that baseball? About baseball?
That's not about baseball at all, I don't believe, but...
All right, well, then I'll shut up.
No, this is up there. I think it's the most recent, probably good baseball movie I can think of. But,
yeah. Well, I never saw 42, the Jackie Robinson movie, but apparently that's pretty good.
Interesting, guys. Just about business, though.
That has a... Han Solo's in that movie.
And Chadwick Boseman.
Yep.
Chadwick Boseman is Jackie Robinson. I tell you what, yeah. The first half of this movie, like I said, you're sucked in, and I was like, all right, it's time to become a baseball guy. I'm like,
oh, no.
For the Moneyball book. I'm like, you know
oh,
what,
no.
It's time to get into it. And then as it kept going, again, I really enjoyed the movie. I don't want to, like, to be clear, I really
Cody,
liked
I think
this movie.
I think this might be, like, for you, my top or your Top Gun.
Oh, where you're like, I can't deny it's a good movie, but if I
oh, no, well, actually, no, never mind. I have to choose a different one. Maybe so, like, the Soviet movie I watched, Man with the Movie Camera.
Okay. Interesting. interesting. I have to check that out. But, yeah, so it's undeniable. There's baseball, it's the American sport. There's a lot of stuff that pulls at you, even if, you know, it's rooted in this crazy, super rich game, right, that makes it so teams aren't fair. Like, I think that's that start with Billy Bean, where he's just like, there's rich teams, there's poor teams, and then there's us. And it's like, damn, that's like the dichotomy. This guy isn't talking about, like, we just got to make a winning team. He's talking about, no, the fact of it is some people have tons of money to pour into this, and they they just get to win. It's very, it's interesting. I don't know.
They
it's
get
kind
to
of a
win
case philosophy.
Easier, or they get to win with what already exists. And I think, to me, that's like a huge thing about this movie is just innovation in general. Like, and what's possible with that, like, achieve, because that's the one thing that I feel like Jonah Hill, I really love Jonah Hill in this movie. I think
we didn't
really talk too much about him, but I think he does a really amazing job, and he presents this, I don't know, this stoicism almost about, like, okay, I know this. He sees the numbers, and he's confident, right? He's the guy, like me, you know, we see the numbers, and we don't have to, like, worry about anything.
He's also, like, self-aware.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great word. Yeah, he knows exactly, like, he knows what he's talking about, and he knows what he's asking and all that stuff. And,
he knows, like, it's, like, hard to, like, you know, like, I don't want to step out of line here.
The line that crystallizes that is when he says, if you're confident in that, why don't you make the choice? And he's like, because then I have to explain it. And, like, that's the point, is it's like, it's hard to explain to somebody why 68% is better than 50%. And that's, like, should be something we base our entire franchise around. Like, he's just, you know, it's that's the self-awareness of, I'm deep into the numbers. I know how the system works. This is what I would do every time. But people then, as we've seen, will fight with you about every single step, because they're like, that's not how baseball's been for the last 150 years. So fuck off.
There's a line at the end of the movie, right after they lose, the playoffs, that really stuck with me. It's like the one of the many bits of, like, talk radio that you hear play, like, in voiceover. It's like, nobody reinvents this game. You know what I mean? It's just like, damn. And then the next scene is like, yeah, he reinvented the game. The Boston Red Sox broke, like, nearly 100 year like, curse or whatever, won the World Series using this philosophy.
Well, and that's the way that it didn't actually necessarily change the game for the better, because it just woke people up to that we should be valuing a lot of these players differently. But now all the rich teams can afford those players, and so for like one magical season, he got the Island of Misfit Toys, but unfortunately didn't win the World Series. And then after that, all the other teams implemented similar strategies, and the rich teams just kept being rich. But
turns out there's a lot of Jonah Hills out there, and each team got one.
Ain't that America?
Yeah, it's that's what's wild. Yeah, it's like First Cow. So I think
I don't think anybody else saw First
Capitalism.
I gotta see it
with other elements that aren't you know, they're using something else as the I don't know what I'm trying to say.
We keep going. I'll listen.
Well, any closing thoughts on Moneyball, or should we get into recommendations?
Pretty solid, I think. Yeah, Brad Pitt, best eater in the game. I don't know how he does it.
Hey, can we get some popcorn in this scene? Maybe put like a bowl of popcorn in this GM's desk. So
he's just
eat?
Like, there's a moment where he's like stops the scene to stuff a Twinkie yes. in his mouth, and then like, it's like wow.
A whole Twinkie. He eats it in two bites. Nom, nom.
But no, I like. I think it's great, a great movie. I think it holds up a lot really well. I think it's one that'll stand the test of time, and especially like I think just yeah. watching it now with the whole AI taking over and art now is getting changed because of this similar right. kind of thing, you know, and have new tools in the toolbox, that some might say. And the thing is it's scary, is just like Andrew said, the rich will take on that and fuck everybody else, fuck this port.
Yeah.
So. That's the scary part, but we'll see. Maybe not. Maybe it'll be different, but I enjoy the movie a lot. And that's why I think like the turn that I know that you were bumping up against Nick and, or if it were even you, Cody, of like, you know, it's thesis kind of changing kind of a little bit. I think that's part of it. It's just like, you know, he's really gung ho about this, but then it's almost like, well, maybe that's, you can't rely on that the whole time. You can't rely on this, there's still going to be that sense of, you know, blood, sweat, and magic and romantic baseball.
For together. Love of the game.
Love of the game. Yeah, pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, anyway. I'm still a big fan.
Agreed.
And as long as we're praising Jonah Hill's performance, I actually thought the dynamic between him and Pitt, I thought they had a really good thing going. And some of the most compelling scenes are just the two of them spitballing back and forth.
Really fun.
Baseball is certainly a broken sport. I think they should have changed things decades ago. One team shouldn't be paying $350 million, whereas the other one can only afford $50 million. It just doesn't seem fair. But I don't know.
Changing
that's
that
the
in
way
wasteland,
it is.
Andrew.
Yeah. I look forward to it.
Yeah,
Morton Hoof. See, he sees the value in you. Like everyone says, like your knees are shot and you can't throw as hard as you used to, Andrew. But Morton Hoof sees the value. He
Thanks,
sees the
Morton.
Numbers.
Hey, you come on over to my place, my realm.
Unfortunately, Morton Hoof's team is called the White Slavers, so that's
what? Hold on, time out. What is happening? Podcast just broke.
They're still canceled. Trying to change the name. It's very controversial.
That's a big choice to make for somebody else, Dave. I don't think you get to do that.
Andrew, I just want you to let you know that's not my team's name, and
Just cut the section out. Let's just move on to recommendations. Just cut it there. Just cut it. There's not going to be any value in Dave white slavery.
What the fuck happened?
Oh, man. If we want to turn this into business, Dave, the shareholders have talked. They're removing you from the podcast.
Yeah, we're invoking protocol Papa John's, buddy.
Execute protocol Papa John's.
Wow.
Do you think we could get Mike back in a trade for Dave?
Dave was supposed to have given up his rights to make these decisions, and he came back in.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
We'll keep that profit, too.
Yes. Well, the next time when Hot Dave Summer Film Fest returns.
Did we do recommendations? I guess it doesn't matter.
I guess we all do, right?
I like the yeah. It's I think it holds up. It'll be one that I think will stay relevant with just different people can relate different ways to it.
Mm. Well, I definitely recommend it, and this might be one of my new favorite movies, honestly.
Really?
Wow. I loved it so much. I was like, even though I have a lot of qualms with it, I think it's like my favorite movie that I don't think is perfect for me because there's still some things I see, but I still love it so much. It's really a unique take, and honestly, to me personally, it was inspiring. Like, I haven't felt that kind of motivated by a movie to like pursue something in a while, like in terms of like something tangible. And I just that first, I don't know, third of the movie when Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill meet and they start strategizing and talking about all the capabilities and like basically the world you don't know about baseball. I just love that shit, and it's like that's true. Like, and that's the kind of stuff I kind of deal with in real life. Is like, okay, what are we thinking about things that are not, or are we not thinking about things and all that stuff? It's just so cool to me, and it was inspiring to see them implement this. And I think that it's a very cool, cool package that this story is told in.
Yeah, definitely. I recommend it. I really enjoyed the movie. Yeah, everybody covered it. It's a good movie. Watch it.
Same. The batting average of this movie is very high. So check it out.
Gets on base.
This movie gets on base, man. It may not win the championship at the end, but you know, yeah.
What the fuck are you saying?
I don't know. I'm trying to say baseball things. The movie is really good,
so it does win the the movie wins. What the fuck are you talking about?
This reinvents the game. I'll say that. Moneyball reinvents the game, literally and figuratively. Anyway,
literally, it literally reinvented movies, Dave.
Everybody's saying.
Well, when we return, it'll be the final installment of Hot Dave's Summer Film Fest. And it's probably best that this is the final movie that we're watching, because after this episode, I might be put into this tournament of death sport. I don't know. I feel like my co-hosts are turning on me. But when we return, we will... God, I lost it.
Because if you think your co-hosts are turning on you, the truth is your co-host turned on you long ago. It's just through, as we know of the history of the store, you run it kind of like a plantation or something, bro.
Well, when we return, it'll be about the numbers again. Ratings, though. Ratings, that is. When we come back, we'll be in the future with The Running Man. I'm getting out of here because I am having such a hard time trying to introduce the next episode.
Holy shit. I'm going to pass out.
I struggled there. I am going to the minor leagues after that performance.
Is that it?
Yes.
Okay.